The following program is pre-recorded.
Jerry Pippin!
Welcome back to Elvis, the Man, His Music, and His Life, as told in his own words by his associates and friends, as well as by Elvis himself in his own words and music.
Elvis, what's your idea of the ideal girl?
Female, sir. Well, sir, I really don't know. I like a lot of different types.
You pick up the Elvis story in 1967. Up until now, that comment about the girls had been giving millions of women around the world hope that they could meet and greet Elvis in person. After all, Elvis was being touted, portrayed as a ladies' man by Colonel Tom Parker and his smooth PR machine. However, soon Elvis would change his life in many ways. And one of the major changes actually had its genesis 8 years before in 1959 in Germany, when a mutual friend invited Priscilla Ann Beaulieu, the stepdaughter of Captain Joseph Beaulieu, to a party at Elvis's house. Elvis had started a tradition before he went into the army, it continued there and even afterwards, of having Saturday night parties with friends and associates when he was not on the road working. George Klein, who was a disc jockey in Memphis and became a personal friend of Elvis, relates how that first meeting went between Elvis and Priscilla.
So he was getting ready to get out in the army, and Elvis used to have people over to his house in Germany just like he did in America, and one of the guys who'd been hanging out at his house brought this little girl over. As soon as she walked in the door, Elvis was smitten by her. He was just taken by her. She was so drop-dead gorgeous at 14. She may have been 14, but she looked like she was 21.
Look at him, and well, I'm head over heels. I guess that love is a banana peel. I feel so bad, and yet I'm feeling so well. I slipped, I stumbled, I fell. One crazy kiss, and bam, I head for the skies. I guess that love is like a cable ride. She stayed alone, but then you never can tell. I slipped, I stumbled, I fell. I never thought I'd get kicked by your sweet-talking lies. You got a bag of tricks, and when you got busy, I got dazzled and dizzy. I feel like a ton of bricks. My knees are weak, my head is spinning around. I guess that love has turned me upside down. When I get hurt, your cheek is turning out swell. I slipped, I stumbled, I fell. I never thought I'd get kicked by your sweet talking lies. You got a bag of tricks, and when you got busy, I got dazzled and dizzy. I feel like a ton of bricks. My knees are weak, my head is spinning around. I guess that love has turned me upside down. All I get hurt, but she is turning out swell. I slipped, I stumbled, I fell. I slipped, I stumbled, I fell.
It pretty much sums up how Elvis felt about Priscilla. Actually, he didn't record that song until 1967, the same year he married Priscilla, for a movie called Wild in the Country. I tripped, I stumbled, I fell. It was spring 1967, and love was in the air, and Elvis got married. Alan Fortas talks about the marriage.
We knew it was coming, we just didn't know when. It had to come one day, but you just never know. In a position like he is, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what he's going to do. Some things he doesn't talk about with everybody, and this is one thing that I'm sure he and Priscilla only talked about.
Elvis, Priscilla, and a small entourage of family and friends arrived at McCarran Airport early in the morning. That was Monday, May 1st. Just before 3 o'clock, the plane landed, and by 3:30, they had driven down to the county courthouse, where they obtained their wedding license. State Supreme Court Justice David Zinoff performed the 8-minute ceremony, and it was about 9 o'clock when it started, and shortly after that, they had a buffet for 100 guests. It was an elaborate breakfast as only you could get in Las Vegas. However, we're sure it cost more than $1.99. Then there was a press conference, and right after that, they flew on back to Palm Springs. Milton Prell, the owner of the Aladdin, had been a friend of Colonel Tom Parker's for about 20 years. Not quite a month later, May 29, 1967, Elvis and Priscilla, dressed in their wedding clothes, and had a second wedding reception, this time in the trophy room at Graceland. It was something to accommodate the family and friends who were not able to go to Las Vegas for the original wedding. By summer, it was apparent that Elvis's lifestyle was going to change. Bones Howe, a Hollywood recording engineer who had worked with Elvis frequently on many sessions in California, put it this way.
There seemed to be two Elvis Presley things happening. There was the guys that he'd always hung out with and so on, and then there was Priscilla and his married life, which was a different thing, and the two things obviously didn't go together.
So the Memphis Mafia members went their own ways. All of them, with the exception of Joe Esposito, who had been an army buddy, Joe would stay on as Elvis's personal assistant. And Alan Fortas would stay employed by Elvis as well. He would be employed by Elvis to run the 163-acre ranch, the Flying G, just across the border from Memphis in Mississippi. Elvis, Priscilla, and their friends would frequently go down there to ride horses. Even though Elvis had been riding horses ever since he made that movie, Flaming Star, it was just now becoming apparent to the public. Not only was it becoming apparent to the public that Elvis was on a horse, but he became country and western in many other ways. All of a sudden, his songs were crossing over and becoming big hits on the country charts. Colonel Tom Parker had been Eddie Arnold's manager for years before Elvis became a big star, and Eddie Arnold had a song called You Don't Know Me. In 1967, Elvis would re-record that song, and it would become a monster hit on easy listening, country, and top 40 stations.
You give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone could tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me. Don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. To you I'm just a friend, that's all I've ever been. No, you don't know me. Never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by, the chance that you might love me too. Give your hand to me, and then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away, beside the lucky guy, to never, never know the one who loves you so. No.
As far as the public knew, 1967, Elvis would be just working on movies and continuing to be a movie star. But already, Friends had noticed that Elvis was considering a change not only in his lifestyle, in his marriage to Priscilla, but also one suspects that Elvis and the Colonel had already mapped out the next plan, Plan B for the Elvis Presley story. But they hadn't told anyone yet. He was still making movies. And people, well, they had different opinions about Elvis. Many who worked with him knew him as a perfectionist. Listen to Hal Blaine, who is a studio musician and writer, who worked with many of the Hollywood sessions of Elvis Presley.
Because Elvis worked so hard himself, he automatically created harder work for the other people. I mean, if you go in and you work with some star who really doesn't give a damn, you know, who's lackadaisical about everything, and says, well, that's good enough, you know, that's close enough, or that's good, then everyone on the set is going to be the same way. Everybody says, well, fine, hey, I could have done better, but if he figures that's good, then that's good. But when Elvis really wanted it to be right, you know, and everyone sees this going on, and everyone sees Elvis saying, I want this just right, and let me do this again, and I want to do this properly, then everyone falls into that same routine. Consequently, you got hit records and hit movies. You know, regardless of what critics say, there might have been teeny bopper pictures in those days, there might have been the little kids that wanted to see him. But every picture that Elvis did, if you look back and really look at those pictures, they were good, clean, beautiful entertainment.
Others like Jack Good, an actor and later a TV producer of music shows himself, had a different opinion of Elvis.
I just said, why don't you make some good films? And he said, well, I'll leave it up to the Colonel, you know. But I am going to be doing something good pretty soon. But he didn't want to talk about it. And you could tell he was sort of being bored out of his mind doing these pictures. That was the reason, I suppose, you know, he was prepared to gag around a bit, you know, because what else was there to do? Nothing. Same old stuff. Elvis in boat. Elvis waving at girls. Elvis driving up. Elvis driving away. Elvis hitting somebody. Somebody hitting Elvis. That's about all it was, you know. And Elvis sort of warbling away in that curious baritone.
Despite what Jack and many others thought, Elvis was still a perfectionist. And he got his first Grammy in 1967. And it wasn't for a rock and roll song, nor a country song, but for a gospel album, his second gospel album. The title selection was How Great Thou Art. Cecil Blackwood of the Blackwood Brothers tells us about the song.
This has been the number one gospel song around the nation now for many, many years. This is a song that was an old English melody put to new words. And it's been sung by such people as, of course, the Blackwood Brothers, the Statesmen. Billy Graham has used this as a theme song for many years.
Then I the world. Then sings my soul.
'67 was a key year in the life of Elvis. By summer, he was in New Mexico on location making another movie, and no doubt thinking about ending his movie Hollywood career and going back to his roots as an entertainer extraordinaire. Priscilla was in Memphis at Graceland, and rumors were that she was pregnant. By 1968, it will be apparent there is indeed a new Elvis Presley for the world to hear and for the world to see. We're having a contest this summer, and we have our first winner of the essay contest, Marsha Resnick of Prescott Valley, Arizona. We had asked for submissions by email in 25 words or less on why I wish Elvis were alive today. Marsha sent us a poem. She wrote, "How I wish with heart and soul that Elvis were here today to fill the empty hole, that his presence fills so dear my heart. Elvis and myself will never be far apart." I'm sure she speaks for all fans of Elvis. We're going to be mailing her an Elvis t-shirt from the Elvis t-shirt people, and that's t-shirts.com. Our next contest is now open. Same rules, same subject. Send us an email with your submission to Jerry@JerryPippin.com. And we will be announcing the winner the last week of July.